3D Printing Today, show number 4. The Hobby Printer Landscape, Stick versus Release, How Would You Invest, Nozzle Slips.
Welcome to 3D Printing Today, the podcast about all aspects of 3D printing, hobby, industrial, professional. My name's Andy Cohen. I'm here with my good friend, Mr. Whitney Potter. What's going on in 3D printing, Whitney?
Well, the most interesting story I saw this week comes from 3D Systems. And they announced that they have, for the first time, 3D printed a bionic exoskeleton for a woman who was paralyzed in a ski accident many years ago. And now, thanks to a 3D printed exosuit, it's able to help her walk. For the first time, she is now walking again. Thanks to 3D printing.
I think in the medical field is going to see the most advances with 3D, aspects of it, really.
And it's amazing just how fast things are changing. This year we're seeing this as state of the art, cutting edge. It'll be open source next year.
Oh yeah. Speaking of on open source related, another patent has expired. A very important patent, although I'm not sure how yet. It's a patent that uses laser sintering, but with powder. It fuses powder together. That could be really interesting.
Let's build one.
Yeah, let's build one. But that also means a much larger company could build one and sell it commercially.
Sure.
Which means this technique might all of a sudden appear commercially for the hobby level.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Or in the open source
realm. You never know. It should be a lot of fun regardless. Mm-hmm. Speaking of fun, what's happening on our show this week, Whitney?
Well, this week we're going to talk about the hobby printer landscape, just all the different things that are available there.
I'm going to get into some details about stick and release or stick versus release on your build plate.
And then we're going to talk about how would you invest, talking about buying stocks in 3D printer companies.
Mm, oh boy, money. And then we'll talk about nozzle slips. Infamous nozzle slips. Let's get to it.
All right. So I understand there's two basic branches of sort of the hobby family tree.
Yeah.
There's the MakerBot and the RepRap.
Yeah. That's where it is right now for a hobby. When you look at 3D printing overall, and we're talking additive manufacturing,
right?
Not subtractive. Although I think the scope of this show should include subtractive.
Okay.
I don't believe that 3D printing is only going to be additive. That's just my opinion.
You mean like the M-Core?
Is subtractive and I mean, there might be some desktop milling systems that would get us kind of excited.
Sure, sure.
Although it might make a mess with it. be that as it may, we're going to take a look at hobby printing. That is printing that usually costs the person who buys the machine between, well, you can go as low as $200. We'll talk about
that. That's another topic.
We'll talk about that. And as
low
high
as 100 now, they
oh
say.
My, oh my. And you can go as high as... gosh, I think the Z18 that they're talking about from CES was about $6,700. That should be available in about 2-3 months.
You're getting out of hobby range there for most of us.
Yeah, probably. I would say $5,000.
That's a heck of a hobby.
Yeah, well, I've got a $9,000 lathe out there. I'll show that to you.
People do.
You get into your hobbies. Look at Jay Leno, man.
That's Jay Leno, though.
So getting back to hobby printers, though. Mm-hmm. So basically, like you said, one side's RepRap, the other side's MakerBot. Let's talk about the RepRap side.
Mm-hmm. The replicating replicator.
Something like that. Okay, it started up right after the original patents ran out for what they call FDM, which is fused deposition modeling which is basically the hot glue gun spitting out the liquid plastic,
squeezing out
lines.
Spaghetti.
and when that ran out, some folks in Bath, England got together and came up with this idea of self-replicating machines. That's a cool idea.
That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, these machines, though, they kind of characterize themselves with the bed that holds the object, having the Y axis,
The bed sliding back and forth,
back and forth. Mm-hmm.
which that seems like a problematic idea to me, because especially if you got something tall and thin and whippy, and you're moving it back and forth fast.
It's a lot of mass.
a lot of mass to move, and you're moving your thing back and forth. So, I mean, aren't you going to be changing its geometry as you whip it back and forth?
That's a good question.
Maybe you're not moving fast enough to do it, but it always struck me as that a problematic idea.
It struck me that way, too. Mm-hmm. There are some RepRap style printers, though, that I would not say no to. I mean, I really would love a Maker Gear. I think that's a beautiful machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the X-axis stays at the goes left and right, but the X-axis and the Z-axis are combined in these kinds of printers.
Right.
And so the printer has kind of like a square or rectangular frame where the X-axis travels along the top of the frame and goes downward. And the Z and the downward Z, X and Z, where the Y axis is the bed on the bottom, and it's shifting in and out of the rectangle. Mm-hmm. It's a standard design. Mm-hmm. And along with those designs come the controller boards, the standard RAMPS controller board, which is another segment.
Yeah.
And there's the new printer board, which I've got a copy of with my two up. And then there's one more, the I'm drawing a blank. There is one more controller board that fits in that world. But
just one?
There might be a bunch. There might be a bunch. But but the world of RepRap is somewhat smaller. It's not expanding commercially. Open source is always there and it's still strong.
Yep.
The Prusa i3 is probably one of the most popular kits right now.
You hear all about it. Yeah, it does seem to be doing well. Yeah.
So. Now, if we go to the MakerBot side, before we go further, the biggest difference between these is not just the frame. It's what they use to do the 3D printing.
Okay.
So on the RepRap side, do you recall what the controller board actually uses for the object? It's running straight G code into the control board.
Yeah.
Now on the MakerBot side, you still turn your STL model, the .stl
into G code,
into G code,
and then you combine it or compile it,
into what?
Was it 3G?
X3G.
X3G, yeah.
It used to be S3G.
S3G, right. That's the old option.
But about a year or so ago, X3G became the standard.
Yeah.
If you ever, I don't know if MakerWare or Replicator G can still save as S3G, but if it does, and you run it on your Replicator 2, your Replicator 2 will dance off its desk because it doesn't use acceleration.
There is an option for that on RepG. In fact, it's you have to select. Every time, I mean, you can make it default to the right one, but you have to at least on the one I have, you have to make sure you've got the right one every time.
Yeah, well, if you use the Replicator G for Sailfish, my friend fixed it, so it doesn't do that anymore.
Oh, good.
But in any case, it's X3G is the standard today for the MakerBot side, and it's still open source for the Replicator 1 style machines. Uh-huh. But beyond that, it's closed source, which means they're trying to make it as commercial.
They were bought, so they're in the big game now.
Yeah, they sure are. One of the most basic skills that one has to learn is related to the bed. After you've learned to level the bed, which is a skill that you can pick up pretty easily, you've got to learn how to get your prints to stay on the bed. So there's really two things going on here. You need to learn how to get the thing to stick. The filament, as it extrudes out the hot end, how to make it stick, stay there. When that stuff comes out initially, you want that little line to stay where it was. You don't want it moving around.
It causes a lot of trouble if it's up flapping around.
you got that first layer is kind of critical. Yeah,
that's it. Yep.
Yeah, and then later on, you don't want the corner kind of popping up. You don't want that. You don't want that stuff hitting the nozzle. It's going to clog your It's going to ruin your print.
No, it makes the whole thing vibrate, and then everything gets all jiggly.
Or it'll just knock it right off.
Right. Yeah. I've had all that happen.
you don't want that. You want that layer. You want the whole thing to stay stuck to the bed. That's kind of a tricky thing because the second side of this thing that you've got to learn to do good 3D printing is you got to be able to get the object off the build plate.
Right, when you're done.
Right. So, you know, gluing it with CA glue is going to, you know, get a chisel to get it off.
Get it off, hopefully without having to re-level the build plate every time.
Yeah, but, you know, always checking your level is a good thing. Uh-huh. You get a nice smooth extrusion on your first layer is really good.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist.
I've come to realize that.
But getting it to learn reliable stick and reliable release is something that is an incredibly important thing to do. Mm-hmm. Now, there's lots of things that you could do on your build plate to get the stick.
Okay.
Now tell me, what is it that you like to do on your flash?
Well, so far, you know, I haven't really experimented with a whole lot of other stuff. I mean, it comes with Kapton, and I've been doing pretty well with Kapton for ABS at least. PLA and nylon, it's you know, useless.
Yeah.
But you can use blue tape too. I wish I could find blue tape, you know, wider than 2 inches.
Yeah.
I'm sure they sell it somewhere, but not in, you know, anywhere around here.
Not inexpensively. You can buy it online.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, you know, what I like about the Kapton is that it's fairly durable, and it's like, you know, I change it maybe once every 2 weeks, and I'm running my printer pretty much not 24/7, but I'm running it as much as I can, you know, as fast as I can feed it, pretty much. That works pretty well for me. Although, you know, I print mostly with rafts because there is, you know, if your first layer doesn't stick, it's all over. and the big problem with the Flash Forge is that the heated build plate is just so far out of level. It's just a joke. And a raft is, the extrusion is so thick that it makes up for that.
Now we're going to have to talk about upgrades.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I've heard great talk about glass and hairspray. So we'll get into that. All right. Yeah.
So Kapton is kind of where everybody was at about over 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was primarily because of ABS.
Right.
ABS was the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And heated build plates were the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And a heated build plate, almost by its very nature, is going to warp.
Right.
So you really want a nice flat surface so that the nozzle's always the same distance away from the surface. Mm-hmm. It has to be very flat. So you can get some glass. Some people use Pyrex or borosilicate glass, which you can get from McMaster Carr. Or you could use regular plate glass. Just don't throw it in the refrigerator after it's been hot, or it will crack.
Let it cool down to room temperature first.
Yeah, let it cool slowly. Mm-hmm. It still works.
Mm-hmm.
And you can put Kapton tape on the glass. In fact, I got into an interesting debate today about that. You could still use Kapton tape with glass.
If you wanted to. getting Kapton tape to lay down flat when you've got a 6-inch wide Kapton tape is something of a challenge. I mean, I've worked on techniques to do that, but, you know, there's always some little bubbles. I mean, it's worse than putting a cell phone cover sheet, you know, protector on your cell phone and getting it.
I've heard Windex or soapy water comes in real handy. Get the glass, you know, soapy or wet with Windex, and then the thing will slide around, then you let it sit and it dries.
Gotcha.
That's a good way to get it on.
Yeah.
But I used Kapton tape for a couple months, and I bought the Kapton tape from a fairly reputable place, and it was quality Kapton tape. I mean, I sell Kapton tape in my shop. I have a roll of it here somewhere. I was going to show you. Really, this stuff's pretty durable stuff.
Right.
And I put it down, and I printed a fairly large object, and when it was all complete, I used my little spatula.
Little scraper.
Very careful. I remember the person I was debating today said, "You probably didn't know what you were doing removing it." Well, I'm talking about months and months of learning to do this.
Right, sure.
I'm carefully sliding the thin blade in there and working it in so I don't ruin the brand new Kapton. It gets ruined.
Yeah, yeah. You'll peel it off.
So you got to put a new one down.
Yeah.
And you put another one on it, it gets ruined.
All right.
And you got to put another one down.
Yeah.
That gets frustrating. It gets really frustrating.
Yeah.
Stuff's not that cheap.
It's not that cheap, and it's the hassle of putting it down and putting it down absolutely flat. That's I would be just as happy to never have to do that again.
And so now let's switch to blue tape. Okay. Now let's say, okay, I'm not printing ABS. Today I'm doing PLA.
Right.
So I'm going to use blue tape.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't just use any blue tape.
Uh-huh. It has only to be the right 3M.
Only a few of them. 3M 2090.
Okay.
There's a couple more. You have to lay it down fairly carefully. carefully and get that seam just right.
Line up the seams, yeah.
It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
You have to wipe it down with denatured alcohol or it won't stick.
Yep.
And then you really got to wrap it all the way underneath the plate or it's going to pull up.
I remember printing Talma nylon. I had a thing about the raft was about an inch and a half in diameter, and that stuck so well to the blue tape that it peeled the blue tape off of the entire table.
Yep, it'll do that. The blue tape will stick to the object, but it won't stick to the plate.
Can't stick to the plate.
Right.
I put binder clips on the edges to hold the blue tape down.
Oh, man. But then there's blue tape has another extreme disadvantage. Uh-huh. Sometimes it sticks to the object too well, and you can't get it off the object.
Gotcha. Okay.
You scrape it and scrape it, and by then the surface is ruined.
Yeah.
Now, let's say it does come off the blue tape, and now you have a wrinkled surface to match the blue tape. Now, I've got a frame here that looks like glass because it was printed on glass.
Sure, yeah.
So I use a liquid vinyl.
Okay.
And liquid vinyl's in a hairspray. Not just any hairspray. You can't just go to the store and buy hairspray. So when you're reading about this stuff on Google Groups, and everybody uses the capital HS.
All right.
Don't just think it's any hairspray.
Not just any.
Yeah, it's not going to work. Aquanet unscented, super extra hold. You can see my can right here.
Yep.
Now,
I picked them up the other day. It's coincidentally probably the cheapest hairspray you could possibly buy. Yes.
I remember when
it's unscented, supposedly.
Yes. Well, no,
it still smells.
It still smells. It doesn't smell that bad.
At least it doesn't smell like flowers. It
doesn't smell like ABS.
That's true.
But, you know, I remember getting my hair cut years ago, and I was thinking about trying this. And so I asked hey, you guys, what's the best hairspray to give you the most stick possible? And in unison, all of the haircutters all said, Aquanet.
Right?
So this in the purple can, and I hear there's another can color, like a bluish that they do, but it's unscented.
There's sort of a white color, but it has a fragrance.
Yeah. So. I don't know if it's the same formulation.
Oh, yeah, it could
and,
be.
And
yeah.
like everything else in 3D printing, the formulations vary from can to can.
Sure. Yeah.
Some stick better than others.
Right.
Don't generalize from one can or one spool. Rule of thumb for 3D printing, never generalize.
So you're finding variability in different cans of the same hairspray.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, let's talk a little bit about what's in here. There's a liquid vinyl in this stuff.
Okay.
And that liquid vinyl is what gives you your stick.
It's scary that anybody would want to spray that on their hair, by the way. Well, and inhale a lot of it in the process.
And it washes right off, though. It does wash right off. Uh-huh. And that gives you your stick. Now, I've used this on my bed on my flash forge, the glass plates and Lexan. Now, you use this for two reasons.
Okay.
You use it for stick and or release.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there is another kind of hairspray that gives you good stick. It's called Garnier Fructis number 5.
Okay.
But that is all stick. Real good stick. You want to be able to get good stick and release. And you want to be able to dial the stick in.
Right.
So you can get more and more stick. So you put in more layers.
And yet still release it.
and to release it, when it's really stuck, you put it in the freezer.
Okay.
And it comes off.
Cool.
Give it 5 minutes, you just lift it off.
But the Garnier Fructis does not.
Well, it does, but it takes all the hairspray off with it.
Ah, okay.
And you have to relay it down. So it does still come off, but it doesn't stay to the glass. Whereas the Aquanet, you can just put that plate back on after it warms up, and then you don't have to spray any more on there.
Gotcha.
But what I like to do is I do three very, very thick coats of Aquanet so that it's like really, really wet.
Okay.
So it's a completely covered, and you can see the surface moving of the Aquanet. Let it dry.
Okay.
And then do it again.
Uh-huh.
Let it dry, and you can spray it while it's still wet.
Okay.
But you want to get a multi-layered, very thick overlay, and that sticks through suction.
Okay.
That's really bonding to the glass with suction.
Right.
Glass or metal or mineral, that's what you're using.
Okay.
To get a nice flat surface. And then right before I print, with it in the printer, I know people would think I'm nuts, but there are others who would agree with me, a tiny, tiny spray right on the glass, just a quick little tiny burst, is not going to ruin your printer.
Sure.
I've been doing it now for over a year.
Yeah.
My printer's printing as well as ever, probably better. and that gives you a little tiny thin film that bonds to the object.
Mm-hmm.
and the in-between, they bond to each other.
There's a little bit of solvent still
in it. And that's proven to me in almost a year of constant use to be the most reliable stick release system I can come up with. I still have a spool of blue tape that for my replicator, too. I still have Kapton and blue tape at the shop for the Flashforge. I also use Lexan. By the way, if you're using PLA, you can go straight Lexan. And it'll stick to Lexan, and then you bend it, and it pops off.
Pops off, sure.
And then eventually the stick won't release, and then you just wipe it down with an emery, really fine emery cloth, and then it'll release again. So Lexan works really good. That's another topic of discussion.
So you're using the glass and hairspray combination for both PLA and ABS?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And it's working well for both?
It's always worked really, really well.
Excellent.
Nylon's a different story. We'll talk about that another time. Yeah,
if anybody figures it out, let me know.
So, Whitney.
Mm-hmm.
Are you into investments and finances?
A little bit, yeah.
I am too. I mean, I've got a portfolio. I'm old enough. I've been doing it most of my adult life.
Yep.
And I know we're getting listeners who have no 3D printer at all.
Sure.
In fact, I would bet you there's more activity on the interwebs on 3D printing for money and investment.
Sure.
And so, you know, I've looked at that. You know, in the past couple of years, learned a lot about the primary companies involved. And I've dabbled. I have dabbled. I mean, how would you invest?
Well, it's a wild ride.
Yeah, it is.
I got to tell you, you'd feel really bad. It's a good day to talk about this.
Today is a good day to talk about it.
Because you would feel really bad if you bought 3D Systems yesterday, and you'd feel like a genius if you bought it today. Because 3D Systems dropped 20%, almost 20% today. I checked it about midday. I didn't check on the close.
It wasn't just 3D Systems.
It was the whole market segment.
It was also Stratasys dropped.
Yeah.
But as an investor, I'm a long-term investor.
Sure. Yeah, I am too.
And I don't sell. Yep. I buy to keep and hold.
Yep. I actually bought more 3D Systems today.
Good for you. Good for you. In fact, I'm kind of...
It's on sale.
You could see it that way. Yeah. 3D Systems is my next one I'm going to do, my next opportunity. But my last one was Stratasys. Now, I would invest in both. And why? Well, not because of MakerBot, that's for sure.
Right.
Although
it's
know
a very small piece of their pie.
It is. I know that it from a marketing standpoint, MakerBot is brilliant. Their marketing is brilliant. That doesn't say much. You know, you can market, but if your product doesn't work, it's not going to be the dominant product. But right now, MakerBot is the dominant product.
Sure.
I don't want to get into that right now.
Yeah.
We could talk about that in other segments. But I invested in them not because of MakerBot, but because of the patents.
Sure.
I invested in the intellectual property.
Right.
Now, a few months back, I don't know if you remember the news, 3D Systems bought out the part of Xerox up in what used to be the Tektronix neighborhood up in Oregon.
Okay.
That owned all the 3D printing related patents that Xerox had come up with. And so now they own quite a few patents, but Stratasys still owns some of the more crucial patents, such as the enclosure patent, ones related to enclosure, the patent related to patterned infill, which you'll notice the new Simplify 3D does not do. It's really intriguing.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, you know, if you're going to invest, it's in the future.
Yeah.
It's not today. If you read the financials, like the Verge, they're saying, there's a couple of papers out there that have used these numbers that they're expecting a 350% increase in 3D printing market in the next 2 years.
I would believe that because you look at all the industries that it's just exploding in, you know, I mean, all the different markets they're using, a 350% increase. I mean, that you're not going to see that in any individual stock price, although you did last year on a couple of them.
Yeah, you did.
So, you know, I wouldn't count on seeing that again in the next couple of years, because I think the increase in stock price came from people speculating on it. and driving the market up rather than any real increase in value in their market segment. They're just not growing that fast.
Yeah, I think we need what has been called an inflection point. Uh-huh. The guy that was the head of Intel always had this term called inflection points, where mm-hmm. something happens in the technology
right.
and the whole market changes.
Right.
And I think we're going to see that in 3D printing in the months and years ahead.
Uh-huh.
Somebody's going to find an alternative to what Stratasys calls FDM, the uh-huh. extruded plastic,
uh-huh.
That will blow FDM away. It'll uh-huh. be something that's as efficient as the Z-Corp gypsum printer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen stuff out there, some wildly amazing ideas, such mm-hmm. as a 6-degree of freedom robot arm
right.
with the extruder at the end.
Yeah.
And it puts the plastic where it needs to be
right.
with no support,
yep.
prints it upside down.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you're going to get somebody coming up with that.
Seems more like a software problem on that one. Yeah.
Somebody will
come up
with
it. I could build you the hardware, but the software?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So along the vein of troubleshooting,
mm-hmm.
Let's remind ourselves what an air print is.
Okay.
That's when you come back to your printer and you see the object way below the hot end and a bunch of
nothing there.
And there's nothing there. Now,
yep.
there might be spaghetti there. There uh-huh. might be angel hair, as you uh-huh. like to call it.
Yeah.
And that could be caused by just knocking the object away,
mm-hmm. right.
which could be caused by lots of reasons, such as mm-hmm. the plastic going upwards because mm-hmm. of a warp.
Right.
Or maybe something spat out too much, an over-extrusion,
uh-huh.
and then it cooled and the head came back and hit it.
Yep.
Anything can happen, and if you don't have enough stick, mm-hmm. of course, too much stick mm-hmm. could be bad. You
right.
don't want too much stick, because mm-hmm. if you're going to be banging the hot end and the object mm-hmm. doesn't move out of the way,
right.
and damage something, it's a trade-off.
Yeah.
But what I want to talk about
mm-hmm.
is the kind of air print where you see nothing coming out of the nozzle,
mm-hmm.
and the object has gone down,
mm-hmm.
and most importantly, you're not hearing stepper stutter.
Okay.
That's the tick, 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 tick,
right.
tick.
So you don't have a clog.
You don't have a clog, which
okay.
that's when the extruder
right.
is trying to push
uh-huh.
the filament out, and the filament's being uncooperative,
right.
and the gear where the filament is just getting held, and the uh-huh. motor keeps trying to turn it, and it's
gotcha.
Going tick, tick,
right.
tick, tick. That's not what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what's happening is that the filament's trying to turn, the gear's turning,
mm-hmm.
and the filament's not cooperating,
uh-huh.
but it's still turning, so
uh-huh.
you're not
right.
getting stepper.
Yeah.
Now, what can cause that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it depends upon your bot,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a flash forge,
uh-huh.
you've got a bladed spur gear.
Right.
And the spur gear cuts a little bit into the filament.
Right.
And what happens a lot with ABS, doesn't
uh-huh.
happen as much with PLA, but
uh-huh.
it still happens, but not
mm-hmm.
as much, is you can slowly fill in the gaps between the blades.
Right.
And eventually the blades are no longer effective.
Right.
Cutting
yeah, they
into,
get kind of clogged up.
Yeah, cutting into the filament.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think in FlashForge has alleviated a lot of this
uh-huh.
with its new spring-armed
mm-hmm.
extruder design mm-hmm. copied right off of MakerBot's
right.
approach.
Yeah.
In fact, it looks as though they actually took MakerBot's designs
uh-huh.
and modified them just a tiny bit,
mm-hmm.
and it works fine with their fluted gear.
Yeah, I got to say, I had one of my print heads apart the other day just to see. You said you were interested in seeing the inside of it, so I sent you some pictures. And that sucker was clogged up. It looked like it was unbelievably. I mean, there was just plastic all over the drive gear,
yeah.
and it feeds fine.
Interesting. But you do want to clean it.
Uh-huh.
You
yeah.
do want to clean right. it.
What do you use to clean it? I went in with like the tip of an X-Acto and started
yeah,
scraping
I
it
used
out,
an X-Acto knife also.
Yeah.
But more intriguing and interesting, and it
uh-huh.
took me 6 months to figure it out.
Okay.
It finally dawned on me, like, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a MakerBot or
mm-hmm.
a FlashForge or
mm-hmm.
a Replicator 1 clone,
mm-hmm.
don't to get to your extruder,
uh-huh.
you want to take the motor off.
Right.
Okay. When you take the motor off, please think, don't take the screws for the fan out of the fan.
Okay.
Leave them in.
Uh-huh.
What you do is you take your Allen wrench.
Uh-huh.
And you loosen up one side of
uh-huh.
the fan screw. Of course, your fan must be off or it'll go into the blade and it'll go into the fan and break the blade. A buddy of mine did it just the other
uh-huh.
day.
Uh-huh.
I heard about it. And you loosen up one screw
uh-huh.
and unplug the motor,
uh-huh.
pull the cable out,
uh-huh.
and then As you loosen up the second screw, push on the screw so the motor slides backward. And this way, the fan assembly with the two little tiny washers in there through the cool block all stays together with the with the heat sink. It all stays in one piece. And then just lift the motor off the back of the carriage. And you have now have access to your stepper motor and the feeder assembly, those the little arm and stuff. And then you clean it. That's that I think is really important to do it that way. And then, yeah, I use a little knife. Now, I have to do that to the replicator, too, also. Every now and then. It fills up with little bits as I'm unloading. Little tiny pieces fall out, and they're sitting in there on the top of the aluminum cool block. You have to go in there and clean it out every now and then anyway. So it's probably a good thing to do, even if you don't have a FlashForge. Now, I don't know what the other Replicator 1 clones do, so we're going to have to find out.
Okay.
But that's what happens when it slips.
Okay.
Hey, Whitney, another show is written on my hard drive.
All right.
Kind of hanging out, waiting to get encoded.
There you go.
It was fun.
It was. It was.
But it's not over yet.
No. Nope.
We've got a thing of the week.
Thing of the week.
And the thing of the week this week is, it's not actually an object. It's on the Thingiverse only to show other people. It's a new kind of open source printer. Well, I don't know if it's a new kind, but it's a different kind.
Right.
It's referred to as a Core XY printer. Now, the person who uploaded that calls himself Unknown, but those of us on Google Groups know him as Jet Guy, and Jet Guy really is the 3D printing open source guru. I mean, he really is brilliant when it comes to 3D printing and building 3D printers. I mean, he's constantly building one after another in all different types. And this one came, there was an original one from another poster. We'll include the original with Jet Guy's post for the Thingiverse in our references. But it's a different type of printer. The motors are on the outside, and the belts run the outside perimeter. It's a much, much longer belt. But Jet Guy's been showing us pictures on the groups and of extreme quality. He's real jazzed about it.
And I think it would have a real advantage in terms of speed because the mass of the gantry has got to be much lower. No motor anywhere moving. Both motors are fixed in place, and if you use a Bowden extruder, then you've got no motors flying anywhere.
It's pretty impressive.
Pretty cool.
When you look at the picture, he's using a Delta Bots bed only because it was lying around. That circular bed, don't worry about it. It's just there for extra parts. So thanks a lot, Jet Guy. It's a really awesome reading. I'd recommend anybody Google Groups 3D printing tips and tricks. What's coming up on our show next time, Whitney?
Well, next time we're starting our series of upgrades to Replicator and FlashForge printers. So if you've got one, you want to tune in to find out things you can do to make your system better.
That's cool. And then you're going to tell us about using a really interesting form of metal spray that just blew me away. This is really cool.
How to spray molten metal on a 3D print.
Slick. Then we're going to talk about rafts.
Rafts and when you need them, when you don't. And then we're going to go on to XT, the new miracle filament.
It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool stuff.
I kind of like it.
Yep.
If you got any tips or tricks or comments, please send them to...
Send them to 3D Printing Today. That's T-H-R-E-E-D. Spell it out. printingtoday@sonic.net.
Or you can post it on our fan page on Facebook. That's 3D Printing Today, three separate words.
Okay.
We're also on iTunes, and we can sure use some love up there.
Hey, always.
Anyway, I think that's it. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, next time.